is no separate English state, no English passport, currency or parliament. In fact, as my next guest has written, there's relatively little that is distinctive to England within Great Britain or the United Kingdom. Nevertheless, there's a strong sense of Englishness, a distinct national identity that's enjoyed a resurgence in recent years, and it may well have had a big impact on the outcome of the 2016 Brexit referendum, with the decision to depart the EU being driven, of course, by English votes. In this context, Exeter University history professor Jeremy Black has carried out an in-depth exploration into the idea of England, where it came from and how it's evolved. By looking into the past, his new book, entitled English Nationalism, A Short History, aims to help us understand the big shifts in England that we're seeing today. And he joined us earlier from Exeter, and I welcomed him.
Good morning.
You do say, Jeremy, that one approach to understanding English nationalism is to look back at its history. So when do you say a form of English identity began to crystallise, please?
I think one could say it starts really with the Anglo-Saxons and the formation of the Old English state in the 10th century. It received a crucial burst from the foundation of Parliament in the 13th century and from the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century. So all of those were part and parcel of Englishness. Britain becomes a more prominent political presence from the 17th century when you've got dynastic union with Scotland, and then from the 18th century you've got parliamentary union with Scotland. And most people would have seen themselves as British. What I think has happened over the last 30, 40 years is, first of all, the end of empire, relative economic decline has led to a measure of uncertainty. But I think also the process has been kick-started by two real political developments. One, the foundation and development of Scottish nationalism, which has become very prominent, such that, you know, the Scottish government is now a Scottish National Party government and wants independence. And that's forced people in England to think, well, if Scotland leaves, what actually becomes of us? That in a way, English nationalism has been forced on the English. And secondly, uncertainties about the relationship with the European Union or within the European Union, and the marked acceleration of those uncertainties over the last few years has led people to cast around for what it would mean if, or if and when, there's a departure from the European Union. So nationalism in part has this very old historical roots, but also is partly to do with very specific political developments in recent years.
Yes, very interesting indeed that you date it to the Scots and the Welsh, or particularly the Scots flexing their muscles.
You know, for the English, who were the majority people in the British Isles, it was easy for them to think that Britishness was not incompatible with Englishness. Whereas for the Irish, who often saw this in terms of, in their eyes, oppression or rule from London, or from the Scots, who got themselves into a view that they didn't get what they wanted from Britain, Britishness was not such a good label. And I think the interesting thing for the English is that Britishness is collapsing around it.
Well, is that the collapse of empire, really?
Part of it goes back to the collapse of empire. I mean, it's interesting that in Scotland, as recently as the 1955 parliamentary general election, the majority of Scottish seats actually elected Conservatives, and you had working class Tory sentiment in places like Glasgow, which in many respects was a sort of imperial nationalism. That imperial nationalism went with the end of empire, and it left people uncertain as to what was to come afterwards. Now, I mean, Mrs. Thatcher made a good fist when she was Prime Minister in creating a sort of sense of identity that worked. It certainly took her to a series of general election triumphs. But I think it's fair to say that since then there has been, among all the political parties, a sense of disquiet, a sense of uncertainty about what they're aiming for. I mean, I wrote a book also recently called Imperial Legacies, which in fact includes a section on Australia, in which I look at the way in which Britain and the British Empire and Englishness is approached elsewhere around the world. And, you know, as it were, the English have the great skill now of being the universal villains. You know, if you're an English actor and you're short of something to do, go to Hollywood.
Self-defined fops almost, sometimes, like, you know, sort of demoralised within.
Well, I think partly that, but partly the identity of so many other countries is based upon their rejection of the idea of being part of an English stroke British empire. I mean, the reality is that in practical terms, in much of the world, not Australia, of course, but in places like India, Britain was just one of a sequence historically of empires. And there's no particular indication that the British empire was worse than what had come before. It's just the last one. And therefore, people, if they're defining modern independence, define it against that origins. And, you know, there are aspects of the British political and cultural inheritance that are a hell of a lot better than if you were sitting here in, you know, in a one-party state like China. Or you know, you could be a Turkish journalist who have the world's highest rate of being locked up and thrown into prison among journalists.
So you're getting into a good defence of Englishness here.
Well, I think that is necessary, because there were lots that the British did that were wrong, which is exactly what you would expect of an imperial power that's been there for a while. Just as, I can tell you, I've been around the Southwest Pacific, and you'll find many Pacific Islanders will tell you terrible things about the Australians. But the practicality is that always rulership has its unpopularities. But one has to be realistic about this. But there is a sense, when we're looking at our history of beating up on the past, and Englishness is something very difficult for the English to adapt to.
Yes.
Because they're so often told it's terrible.
Well, in fact, look, there's so many aspects to this. And what is very interesting in what you say is that under Tony Blair, the Tony Blair and Gordon Brown governments, there was an emphasis, curiously enough, almost a swing back to Britishness as opposed to Englishness. But then under David Cameron, the Conservatives began appealing to England as a political actor. I mean, does this all play in, do you think, to Brexit?
Well, I think it plays to Brexit, yes. I think you're right. I mean, the specific point is this. With Cameron, he had to address the fact that once there were Scottish and Welsh assemblies, Scottish and Welsh MPs sitting in Westminster were voting on matters to do with England, whereas English MPs could not do the same with regard to Scotland and Wales, because those matters were covered by their parliaments. And that was where Cameron was coming from. He was addressing the growing fuss in England about the fact that, as it were, you know, that there was this Scottish and Welsh sort of role in their affairs. As far as Brexit is concerned, I mean, Brexit was a vote for a whole host of things. You know, the European Union has its strengths and its weaknesses, but I think it's fair to say that if you forget about Brexit and you were just sitting here and we were taking part in a discussion at the moment about Italy or France or Spain or Hungary or Poland, we would be voicing concerns about the direction of traffic of the European Union, irrespective of the decisions or arguments made in Britain.
But there does seem to be a very interesting wrestling with. And the Irish columnist Fintan O'Toole has written very interestingly about a nationalism that he feels permeated the Irish soul, which he now sees as almost infusing the English debates. And I wonder if you do think there's this upsurge in an emotional response, notwithstanding all that you've said, that helps us understand what's underway?
Well, I certainly think that people have a wish in all countries to have a wish of identity. And I think one of the sadnesses about the debate on the European Union, whether you think it's a good or a bad idea of Brexit or Remain, one of the sadnesses is the debate on behalf of Remain is almost exclusively on prudential grounds, i.e. if you leave, this is going to be terrible for the economy. What the European Union has really not done is attract the deep-rooted sense of identity or loyalty of people across Europe. So what one has got is people who believe that it's a good thing to be members of an international cooperative body. You've got very few people who will say to you, do you know, I'm a European, I'm not Polish, or I'm a European, I'm not Hungarian, or I'm a European, I'm not British. So I'm not sure whether you want to call that a kind of nationalism. I think it's partly just a need people have to identify, and some forms of identification are better as nationalism than as alternatives. So most most people in England would identify somebody who is born and grown up in England as English. One of the things that is really quite disappointing, let's just put it like that, about, for example, Welsh nationalism is the way it is so stuck on the language. In other words, you are really Welsh if you speak Welsh, not if you live in Wales. And again, one of the unattractive things about Scottish nationalism is the emphasis on Scottishness as a kind of ethnic identity. Now, in that respect, England is more like Australia or New Zealand, in that Australians who come, for example, of Greek or Italian antecedents or Vietnamese antecedents are every bit as much Australian and see themselves as Australian. And that is a particular quality also of Englishness, but it makes it harder to define a nationalism on that point of view because you've got so many different...
Almost like a migrant culture.
Yes.
Mm. Look, this is just a snapshot. We're trying to come in this whole discussion in various ways, and I really thank you for bringing quite a fresh perspective, and I hope we can speak again.
I very much hope we can speak again, and I would urge you to read my book on imperial legacies because it has a lot in it to do with Australia.
Thank you very much indeed, Jeremy.